You're tuned in to the Kojo Nnamdi Show on WAMU 88.5. Welcome. Today, it's your turn to share what's on your mind. What stories are sticking with you? What's sparking conversation in your community? What stories should we suggest to you? News broke late yesterday that a U.S. Coast Guard lieutenant living in Silver Spring who self-identified as a white nationalist was plotting a domestic terrorist attack targeting Democratic politicians and journalists. What do you think about that? Were you surprised that this alleged terrorist plan, did it come as a surprise to you? Give us a call. The Vatican has defrocked former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, stripping him of the rights of the priesthood after an investigation found he abused both children and adults. Some of his abuse victims live in the Washington region. Are you Catholic? What does the Vatican's punishment of Cardinal McCarrick say to you? Is it fitting or too little, too late? Do you remember last month, eons ago, when a video of an encounter between a teenager wearing a Make America Great Again hat and a Native American activist on the National Mall went viral? Well, now that teenager, Nicholas Sandman's family, contests the characterization of the events that day and is now suing the Washington Post. They're seeking $250 million in damages, the same amount Washington Post owner Jeff Bezos paid for the paper. The suit alleges that the Post, quoting here, targeted and bullied 16-year-old Nicholas Sandman in order to embarrass President Trump. It is your turn. You set the agenda today by making your calls. Joining me in studio is Jacob Fenston. He is WAMU's environment reporter. Jacob, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Kojo.
The Washington region got pummeled with snow, sleet, and freezing rain yesterday, leading schools and government offices to close. Some school districts are running out of snow days and are looking to adjust their schedules. That would be tough on one Arlington family who the Washington Post reported on yesterday. They have three kids enrolled in public and private schools across different jurisdictions, making snow days for them parental purgatory. Do you have kids in different schools and different districts? How did you handle yesterday's snow day? Give us a call. Can you easily coordinate childcare when inclement weather keeps your kids at home? Well, whether you have kids or not, did your jurisdiction handle all the snow, sleet, and slush? Well, Jacob, while we're on the subject of Washington weather, let's talk about the climate issues facing our region. A new report says that if current climate change projections hold, in one generation, D.C. will feel a lot like Greenwood, Mississippi. What will this feel like on a season-by-season basis? Will we even have seasons anymore?
Right. So, there will be seasons that will just be very different. So this is based on sort of a business-as-usual scenario. If we keep emitting greenhouse gases at this current rising rate and don't do very much to slow it down, these researchers found that D.C.'s climate in the 2080s will feel like Greenwood, Mississippi does today. And I printed out some average weather there just to compare. So, for example, February in D.C., the average high temperature now is 44 degrees. So that's about like if you went outside right now, it's about that temperature, kind of cold. In Greenwood, Mississippi, the average high temperature in February is 58 degrees. So that's pretty different.
That's a 14 degree difference.
Yeah. Yes. And then in the summer, its average high in August is 92 compared to D.C.'s 84. So things would be a lot warmer in the winter, hotter in the summer, very little, if any, snow.
How did climate change scientists come to this conclusion?
So it was two researchers, one at the University of Maryland Center for Environmental Science and another at North Carolina State University. And they basically, it's not new information, but they wanted to find a way to communicate it that would really resonate with people. So they took data from climate data from the 1960 to 1990, sort of historical data, and compared it to projections from the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that for the 2080s. And they looked for sort of analog cities for 500 cities in North America. So the one that matched up for D.C. was Greenwood, Mississippi.
Apparently other big cities will be affected too.
Yeah, and they have this whole interactive map, which is very fascinating and frightening to look at. But, under this high emission scenario, for example, Minneapolis would be more like Kansas City, Missouri. Portland, Oregon would be kind of like Central California. Denver would be like Texas. Los Angeles would be the southern tip of the Baja Peninsula in Mexico. It sort of helps you imagine this changing climate in a way that's hard if you're just talking about sort of mean global temperatures or the numbers of days that will be above 90 degrees.
Do warmer winters appeal to you, or do they leave you wrecked with anxiety? What questions do you have about this report that Jacob's talking about and about this region's climate future? Now is the time to call. While we're discussing the environment, Jacob, Georgetown University has found itself in a bit of a conundrum. In order to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, a university-backed solar panel project is causing controversy because it would require clearing 210 acres of trees in rural Charles County, Maryland. What's going on here, Jacob? What enemies is the university making as it pushes forward with this project?
Yes, it's a really interesting conflict. There's a bunch of environmentalists in southern Maryland. This is sort of in an area in Charles County, just south of Prince George's. People with the Sierra Club of Southern Maryland who are upset. You know, they found out about this recently. They feel like it's not a good trade-off, that either you shouldn't be cutting down a forest to install a green project. And I think it's interesting because Georgetown, you know, is doing this to try to sort of get ahead and deal with this climate change issue that we've been talking about. And it's actually a very ambitious project. It would be this big solar farm that would provide half the energy to power the entire university, which is huge.
Do you agree with Georgetown's argument about this being a necessary trade-off? What kind of trade-offs have you or your community considered in order to make environmentally conscious decisions? If cutting down 210 acres of trees does not seem like a fair trade-off to you, how do you propose urban areas invest in alternative energy? What exactly is the goal of this project, Jake?
Yeah, so like I said, provide a lot of green energy to Georgetown, and they say that the trade-off is a good one, and basically that the reduction in emissions by providing this solar power to the university would be just so much greater than the value the trees provide. So they sent me a statement that said basically cutting down those 200 acres of trees, putting in solar panels, the solar panels would be the equivalent emissions reduction of 30,000 acres of trees. So, you know, you can bring 200 acres of trees to 30,000 acres of forest in terms of just greenhouse gases. On the other hand, environmentalists in this part of the state say that you could put the solar panels somewhere else, put them on roofs, put them on, you know,
someplace you don't have to cut down trees.
Yep.
Who owns that land?
It's a family that's owned it, you know, forever, basically. And they are trying to sell it to this company called Origis, which is a solar, a solar company. And then Origis basically has a contract with Georgetown to buy that energy into the future.
So Georgetown is moving ahead on this project.
That's the plan. They didn't want to do an interview, but they, you know, gave me a statement defending it. And it's gotten initial approval from Maryland, but there are some more hurdles to jump through, and there is a public meeting, I think, on February 27th.
Back to the study on climate change that we discussed earlier. Joseph emailed, what about humidity in D.C.? I guess Joseph wants to know what the area's humidity level would be if it would change significantly by 2080. I suspect if it's going to get a lot hotter, it's going to be a lot more humid, too.
Yeah, I think it's going to be hot and humid. And, another thing is rain. You know, we're expecting that there will likely be more of these really big rain events, including, you know, those big summer storms that we get.
Jacob Fenton is WMU's environment reporter. Jacob, always a pleasure.
Great to talk to you, Coach.
And if we do get more questions about this, as we might during the course of this hour, I know where to find you. Going over the story of the Coast Guard white nationalist, news broke yesterday that a U.S. Coast Guard lieutenant living in Silver Spring, who self-identified as a white nationalist, was plotting a domestic terror attack targeting Democrat politicians and journalists. He was arrested after federal investigators discovered his supply of weapons and ammunition and discovered notes detailing his dream to, quoting here, kill almost every last person on earth, and also to establish a white homeland. Is there enough public discourse about the threat of white nationalist violence in our communities today? We just read the story of a young man who went into the pizza parlor, Comet Pizza, that became famous for other reasons a few years ago and started a fire there. He later had to be tased while trying to access the White House, I think. Are you concerned about the rise in hate crimes, both in the region and around the country? What do you think can be done to address them? Here is Michelle in Silver Spring, Maryland on that issue. Michelle, your turn.
Hi, Koja. Thanks for taking my call. Yes, I'm in Silver Spring, and last night I was actually looking, trying to figure out where this lieutenant lives in Silver Spring. And while I was doing so, you know, Googling away, I hit upon a white nationalist forum, and they were discussing this. And basically, they're saying his cache didn't look that impressive. If their stuff got caught, they would be in so much trouble. So I'm really concerned about that and wondering if we have any idea who has, you know, these kinds of caches in paramilitary, military. I mean, I'm kind of rambling, sorry. But
well, no, but are you,
you know what I mean? Like, I'm just concerned about, I mean, he had intent, but that kind of pile can do so much with or without intent. And he's not alone. So how many others are out there?
All true. Are you surprised about the fact that he lives in your jurisdiction, Silver Spring?
Not really. Silver Spring is a big mix, but I think I know where he does live, and that was a surprising thing because it's a largely Latino neighborhood, largely Latino, Ethiopian, African. So that was a little surprising. And I may not be correct.
Okay, well, thank you for sharing your thoughts and your concerns. We mentioned that the Vatican has defrocked former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, stripping him of the rights of the priesthood, after an investigation found he abused both children and adults. Some of his abuse victims live in the Washington region. And earlier this week, Georgetown University announced that it is rescinding McCarrick's honorary degree. That's an unprecedented move for the university. The historic punishment of the former Archbishop of Washington has once again shaken the faith of Catholics near and far. So what is your view of this? Are you a Catholic? What does the Vatican punishment of Cardinal McCarrick say to you? Is it fitting or is it too little, too late? Here now is Alex in Tacoma Park, Maryland. Alex, your turn.
Hi, thanks, Kojo. I was going to comment on a slightly different edge of the sexual abuse clergy scandal,
sure.
And that being that there's so much energy on that, and it's a hugely important issue for sure. But I'm curious how little mention there is about the families that the youth came from and why they don't give any kind of more energy on, you know, what is the issue with the family? So I experienced abuse in the Catholic school I went to personally. I couldn't tell my father and stepmother what was going on because of their own social wounds and problems. And that just is
you think
interesting.
There should be...
And for the last 2 years, I've been working for an organization called Boys to Men, and I facilitate mentoring circles in public schools in the area. And basically, you know, we're there so boys can feel listened, admired, modeled, and praised, because they're, you know, with the breakdown of family, so many don't have positive male role models in their lives. And so we're trusted in some cases more than the counselors and the teachers in the school, because, you know, we kind of come in separate. We're not under the umbrella of, you know, school requirements.
So your focus is more on what happens to the families and the victims of Catholic priests. What do you think about Georgetown University rescinding McCarrick's honorary degree? How do you feel about how other faith-based communities have responded to his abuse?
Well, that seems, you know, totally appropriate. Symbolic is important, and it makes sense to me. They finally are stepping up and have a lot of work to do at looking at this shadow in the church, and but I'm more interested in the present now with the boys.
Okay.
and us addressing how, you know, this our social breakdown in our culture, where youth do not have integrated families, united families, and getting their support from the families, and how important mentoring is needed and lost in our culture.
Okay, got to take a short break, but this is your turn where you can just call 800-433-8850. A white woman from Prince George's County made headlines this week for creating three whites-only groups on the events platform Meetup. White woman yoga, white woman walkers, and Caucasian camera buffs. What do you think? Did this touch a nerve? Feel free to share your thoughts with us. What do you think about safe spaces for people of color or for people of other marginalized identities? I'm Kojo Nand.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picco and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back. This is your turn when you get to set the agenda. National pizza chain Papa John's has partnered with local capital city Mumbo Sauce to bring the local condiment to several D.C. area locations. You remember that Papa John's CEO had some problem after he used the N-word. The Mumbo Sauce in this partnership is for the chain's chicken wings and chicken poppers. What do you think of Capital City's decision to partner with Papa John's? Who do you think is benefiting more in this partnership? Joining us in studio again is Jacob Fenton, WAMU's environment reporter, because a lot of people wanted to talk about the Georgetown University solar plan. Here is Orietta in Frederick, Maryland. Orietta, your turn.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I applaud the step that Georgetown is taking in the green direction, but it doesn't make sense to me that we would cut down all these trees. We need trees to combat climate change. Trees store carbon. They help prevent soil erosion. They also protect sensitive species such as birds, reptiles, and other wildlife. I mean, these species need their resources to function. And also, you know, we're on the Mid-Atlantic Flyway. We have a mass migration of monarchs and birds coming through our area that utilize this habitat. There are other ways. There are rooftops. There are abandoned commercial sites. It's really a shame. And as an avid birder and somebody who enjoys the wildlife in Charles County, this is very sad that this is happening all in the name of climate change. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Stay on the line for a second, Orietta. Allow Jacob to comment, and then I have someone who differs with you by way of email.
Yeah, I think that is an excellent point. And, you know, the Audubon Society considers this area along the Potomac in Charles County as an important bird area. And if you look at a satellite image on Google Maps or whatever, you can see it's just this little, it's called the Nanjemoy Peninsula, and it's all trees. You know, it's 81% forest. There's a little bit of agriculture in there, but it's just this really solid block of habitat for birds and other creatures.
Well, Orietta and Jacob, here's what Chris had to say by email. The issue is protecting the bay, really. Cutting the forest increases sediment pollution through erosion. Maryland plans to convert cropland to solar, which helps the bay by reducing nitrogen pollution. To which, Orietta, you say what?
Well, I mean, nitrogen is also stored in the soil as well. So you do need these coastal forest habitats to trap the nitrogen. So that doesn't really make sense to me either.
Okay. And Jacob, we got a question from a Twitter user named Green Moon Art. Why don't they look at all of the unused rooftop acreage in D.C.? Every roof with a southern exposure is a potential energy source. Cutting down thousands of trees in southern Maryland is not the answer.
Yeah, and I think that's you know, a question a lot of people have. When I asked the spokesperson for this company Origis that is doing the solar farm, his sort of reaction to that, he said that it's much more expensive to do these smaller projects either on rooftops or on, you know, smaller industrial sites or what have you. He said it's much more cost effective to find a big piece of land and do it all there.
Here's Linda in Nanjimoy, Maryland. Linda, your turn.
Hi, Kojo. I wanted to give some background on this project and the company that is planning on clear cutting not only this parcel, 210 acres on this parcel, but another 200 acres of forest in Charles County. So this company, Maryland Solar LLC, Maryland Solar One LLC, is formed in Delaware as a subsidiary of Orgis Energy USA, which is a Miami company, which is a subsidiary of Orgis Limited Energy Limited, which is a company out of the country of Cyprus. And unfortunately, we have two issues with the application.
Please try to make your issues brief.
The application misrepresented the value of the forest, which Maryland DNR later rebutted. And we have staff here that Charles County has said has worked too closely with developers in the past. And I don't think that Orgis looked for alternates. And as one of your other guests said, forests do provide more than just carbon sequestration. And there's a this forest, the largest forest in Anjouan, is actually acting as an air conditioner for this region. And these large solar arrays actually become heat islands.
Okay, but I do understand your position. But now that the project has been approved, what do you think it would take to stop it?
Well, I think there's an out for Georgetown. I'm going to assume that they were either did not know where the project was going to be, or where they were also misled on the value of this forest. And
Georgetown given any indication that is open to hearing new arguments on this and presumably revising this proposal?
They have not said much. They you know, issued a short statement.
Okay, Linda, thank you very much for your call.
I was just going to point out, too, that you know, these sorts of conflicts are going to become much more, I think, common in the future. A lot of places in the region have these sort of aggressive goals to increase renewable energy, including solar. D.C. passed, you know, a law in December mandating 100% renewable electricity by 2032, which we've talked about. And 10% of that has to come from solar. So people are going to be looking for places to put solar panels a lot more in the near future, and you know, there's not unlimited amounts of space.
You won't be leaving this room anytime soon. Email from Ryan says, I want to say first that I'm beginning to wonder how the empirical observable data of the weather in Virginia in the last 6 or so years has not convinced many politicians living in the D.C. area that climate change is real. It has been very apparent that since about 2011, winters have been consistently warmer, weather more sporadic, and local ski resorts struggling to keep snow. I've been in Virginia my whole life, and these weather changes have been very obvious and sudden. My question is why, if global warming has been happening for a while, it has seemed to become apparent so suddenly. I guess why the effects are now being seen so dramatically. Maybe because we weren't paying this kind of attention earlier. Is that possible, Jacob?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a whole combination of things, and I think it does, matter what you're thinking about, how you experience the weather, and it's become very politicized. So it's almost hard for certain politicians that you mentioned to change their minds.
Here is Ingrid in Bethesda. Ingrid, your turn.
Thank you, Kojo. Always love your show. My point is like a couple of other callers' points about habitat. People bring this up and when they're arguing it, but it usually doesn't get on the air, is that there are millions, and I mean millions, of living beings in that area. It is their home. And I would urge people, if you think about the deer, the raccoons, the possums, the tree frogs, they have nowhere to go, and the birds, as your caller said, do our civic duty and not just be upset about it, but let Georgetown know, even if they show no indication of changing their minds, if they hear from enough people, they might. It's like the wall. There are always animal problems that are associated with taking down habitat or interfering with migratory routes.
Okay, thank you very much for your call. Care to comment, Jacob?
Yeah, and I mean, just sort of counterpoint to that is also the, you know, the current zoning of the land where the solar farm will go. It could be timbered. The current owner could cut those trees down now just to you know, make money selling the timber. It's zoned, you know, such that it's not protected right now. So it's not necessarily that it's the solar farm that's going to get rid of the trees. The owner could choose to do that right now.
Here is James in Annapolis. James, your turn.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I agree that the proposed trade-off is not sustainable. How many acres of forest do we have that we can cut down for this kind of trade-off? The second point I'd like to make is that the company evidently made the usual argument that alternative approaches are too costly. But clear-cutting forest does have cost, a lot of cost. Some callers have already made the point. So I think the problem with a traditional approach has been to shift a lot of the real cost to the environment and other things. So the economy has not had the opportunity to adjust to the true cost. And I think going forward, this has to change. I think there has to be a paradigm shift. And I think a major university like Georgetown really should be looking toward a better paradigm than to simply adopt the usual approach of just going to a place and cut down trees.
Good comment, Jacob.
I think those are good points, but these projects have to go somewhere, and if they're too expensive, then they're not gonna necessarily happen.
Here's Andrew in Arlington, who apparently favors the project. Andrew, your turn.
Hi. So I just wanted to add a comment to the conversation that the global canopy, the global population of trees that we have in the world, is currently incapable of counteracting and combating climate change on a meaningful level, and we need large scale solar projects like these in order to provide renewable energy that's not going to emit greenhouse gases. And these projects have to go somewhere. And like you said, the land is already zoned for commercial use, so I think this is a great use of land. It's going to do a lot of good.
Well, some people do favor it. Jacob?
Yeah, and if you look at the mix of energy that the DC region uses right now, and I was just trying to pull it up, but it's, renewables are a very small fraction of it. And if we really want to reduce our carbon emissions, like, we have to make really huge changes. It's not about, a couple of solar panels here and there. Like, we really need to make really big changes. And now I can't find the actual energy mix that I was looking for. But yeah, it's not very much renewables right now.
Once again, Jacob, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Kojo.
It's your turn. We do have a lot of other topics to discuss, and there are people who are on the phone who would like to discuss some of those topics. We got an email from Janice who says, child molestation is illegal, and yet I hear nothing about arrests. I'm deeply shocked that McCarrick cajoles seminarians into spending the night with him. How sheltered are these guys anyway? How naive are they, and how vain are their parents? By the way, I am Jewish, and a local rabbi is in jail for abuse of power, too. He videotaped women at the ritual bath of that synagogue, a story that was covered here on WAMU News also. So thank you very much for getting in touch with us, Janice. Here now is Bruce in Laurel, Maryland. Bruce, your turn.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just want to comment. Yesterday you had on that discussion of rape, and the man called up and he said if they're consensual sex when people are drinking, then a woman should have some responsibility. And then you asked the panel and the person, Lisa Johnson, rather than answering that, she says, well, a man, that you are responsible for what you do when you're drunk. But, of course, it was the woman. He was saying the woman should have some responsibility. So she totally ignored the question. And I think there should have been a follow-up, but you didn't have one.
What do you think the follow-up should have been, and how would you have responded to it?
Well, first, if he was still on the line, I would say ask it again. But what I would say is you're responsible. If you drink, let's say you're in a bar. If you drink, you drive home. If you're a college student, if you drive home, you're responsible for alcohol. If you go into a person's apartment, that's not robbery. It's not breaking and entering. But so why is it that not only is it he gets all responsibility, but it's not even a lower crime, it's rape? Why is that a fair thing?
Gotcha. And I think that's what I was trying to extract from that conversation yesterday, but it never really went there. So thank you for bringing it up, Bruce. The Georgetown project in Charles County has got a great deal of response, but we do have to move on from that now. We're going to take a short break, and if that's what you're calling about, hang up, because I'm going to discuss some other issues that people might want to talk about. Some district residents think it may be time to rename Woodrow Wilson High School. The 28th president, remembered mostly for his foreign policy successes like the League of Nations, also promoted policies that marginalized black people in the district. He segregated federal employees and residential neighborhoods. The Wilson High School Diversity Task Force and the D.C. History and Justice Collective hosted a forum last week for students, teachers, alumni, and community members to weigh in. What's your view? Do you think Wilson High School should be renamed? Why or why not? Give us a call. Are you a student, parent, teacher, or alum from Wilson High School? We would love to hear from you. And we mentioned last month when the video of an encounter between a teenager wearing a Make America Great Again hat and a Native American activist on the National Mall went viral. In the video that many shared, it initially seemed as if the teenager, whose name is Nicholas Sandman, was goading the activist Nathan Phillips, and it led to a lot of outcry. Sandman's family contests the characterization of the events that day and is now suing the Washington Post, one of many outlets that have reported on the video. The family complaint says that, quoting here, the Post wrongfully targeted and bullied the student, Nicholas Sandman, and called the Post's coverage of the incidents false and defamatory. The family is seeking $250 million in damages, the same amount Washington Post owner Jeff Bezos paid for the paper back in 2013. The suit alleges that the Post targeted and bullied Nicholas Sandman in order to embarrass President Trump. And the news broke late yesterday that a U.S. Coast Guard lieutenant living in Silver Spring, identified as a white nationalist, was plotting a domestic terrorist attack, attacking Democrat politicians and journalists. Is there enough public discourse, in your view, about the threat of white nationalist violence in our communities today? It's your turn. I'm Kojo Namdi. Welcome back. It's your turn. Just give us a call. We have made several suggestions. Several topics are on the table, so to speak. We'd be interested in hearing your views about the Coast Guard white nationalists. We'd be interested in hearing your views about the white woman from Prince George's County who created three whites-only groups on the events platform Meetup: White Woman Yoga, White Woman Walkers, and Caucasian Camera Buffs. We'd like to hear your view about the Covington teen's family that has sued the Washington Post for $250 million. We'd like to hear your views about whether or not Woodrow Wilson High School should be renamed. And, of course, the national pizza chain Papa John's has partnered with local capital city Mambo Sauce to bring the local condiment to several D.C. area locations. Former CEO of that pizza chain, John Shatner, came under fire last year when he used the N-word in a conference call in which he was apparently attempting to distance himself from other racist actions. Capital City released a statement saying this was a hard decision to make considering Papa John's history, but through conversations and meetings, we realized that the company is made up of a lot of really good people. Where have I heard that before? Who are serious about making sure Papa John's is doing better in the communities where they do business. The Mambo Sauce is for the chains, chicken wings and chicken poppers. What do you think of Capital City's decision to partner with Papa John's? Do you order pizza from Papa John's? And what John Shatner's words in 2018, what do they say to you? Do you, as a Washingtonian, need sort of some sort of gesture of goodwill from Papa John's? Okay, let's talk baseball. Rumors are flying over free agent Bryce Harper, who has reportedly turned down offers worth over $300 million in the past few weeks. At one point, the Philadelphia Phillies seemed to have the best chance in signing him, but the list of competitors has expanded to include the San Francisco Giants, and of course, there's the Washington Nationals, where Harper has played for the past 7 years and where he has become a star. Where would you like to see Bryce Harper land? Give us a call, 800-433-8850. If the Phillies or the Giants offer him a historic contract, should and could the Nationals match it? And finally, there's this. Former city official Josh Lopez spoke this morning at UDC's Founders Day event, despite calls from D.C. lawmakers to revoke his invitation. Lopez resigned from the D.C. Housing Authority's Board of Commissioners last May after being involved in an anti-Semitic scandal. A speaker at a rally that he organized called D.C. Councilmember Alyssa Silverman a fake Jew. Lopez did apologize later and has since been meeting with some community leaders, but Silverman and Councilmember Mary Che from Ward 3 both contacted UDC's president to express their concerns about Lopez's involvement at the rally and his behavior in political campaigns. What do you think? Did you follow the scandal involving Josh Lopez last spring? How do you view his presence at the rally today? Let's go to Catherine in Clifton, Virginia. Catherine, your turn.
Oh, it's an honor to talk to you, Kojo. You're very much respected. And thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I've lived in the Northern Virginia area now for 35, almost 40 years. And in the 80s, my children were in a small Catholic school in Northern Virginia. My daughter about the time was probably 9 years old, and she was molested twice by our priest in that parish. And it was something that he did in public in terms of the way he touched her. So in attempting to report that, I did a little more investigating in the school and found out that this was relatively common behavior that he was doing and pretending that it was funny. He was also doing some other physical stuff like grabbing little girls' earrings and tugging on them until they bled. So I called the diocesan office. The very first thing that I was told by the woman who answered it was, oh, come on now, he's just an old man and he doesn't mean anything and he's going to retire soon. I pushed a little bit because I've worked in protective services, and she said, well, okay, all right, we'll take the report, but, you know, your daughter, she's going to have to tell the story over and over and over again. And that certainly made me, it did make me think, because I knew that would be part of the process, that she would have to tell it at least a few times. And that's where it stopped.
Indeed, yesterday when we had a discussion here on sexual assault and about cases that were cleared in using a factor called extraordinary clearance, one of the things that was pointed out was that when women, young women, or women in general who are traumatized are questioned about those events immediately after the trauma, sometimes they're not in a position to make sound decisions, and so they decide not to pursue it. What you seem to be saying is when you realize just how much this young woman would have to deal with, that you decided not to pursue it yourself.
That's true. And what I also came to find out is within the school, all of the teachers in the school had been warned never to leave that priest alone in the classrooms with the children. So this code of silence that people are talking about, it really exists.
Okay.
And who do I hold responsible here?
Yes.
I don't hold just the perpetrators. I hold the administrators. I hold the bishops. I hold other priests. I hold anybody in the administration.
You hold the institution.
Kojo, they all knew.
You hold the institution of the Catholic Church responsible?
I do, because okay. They all knew. They yep. knew.
Clearly a lot of people do feel that way, and it's going to be a point of discussion over the course of the next several days. It's a point of discussion around the world, even as we speak. So thank you for sharing your view with us, but we do have to move on. On this edition of Your Turn, to Calvin in Silver Spring, Maryland. Calvin, your turn.
Hi. I assume, based on the variety of topics, that this is sort of like an open mic session at this point.
It is.
Okay. I just have an interesting, perspective on renaming Woodrow Wilson High School in the district. You're correct that under his administration, D.C., black citizens of D.C. didn't do very well, particularly in the post office and resegregation of the government facilities. And I sometimes wonder whether, I mean, if you look at Wilson, renaming Wilson, then obviously there's going to be a discussion about renaming a number of the other public high schools.
Not to mention the Woodrow Wilson Bridge. We got an email from someone who asked, what about the Woodrow Wilson Bridge that connects Alexandria and Oxon Hill?
So I wonder whether there needs to be a discussion about their racist past rather than rename the schools, because it's just that it's going to result in a resurgence, with the exception, obviously, of Paul Lawrence Dunbar High School. I mean, that's a different story. But I sometimes wonder when you do that, whether you open up without discussing the racist past.
Well, no, there are discussions taking place at Wilson High School. Indeed, participating in those discussions are people who have made it a history of documenting the history of the Fort Reno neighborhood where Wilson High School is, and talked about the fact that they have ancestors who were forced out of those communities during the Wilson administration, and as a result, lost their property and lost a great deal. So they're having a great many conversations about it before any decision will be made.
Okay. I wasn't aware that there had been some future discussion, but I just sometimes I wonder how, in general, just how are we going to approach, from a broader perspective, renaming, you know, historical institutions without thinking about exactly how we're going to educate people about what their roles were, these individuals.
Right. Well, they seem to be saying at Wilson High School that education, since it is a school, is going to be a central part of this conversation, whether or not the name is ultimately changed. Of course, there are people like Alan who called in but couldn't stay on the phone. He who says it should be renamed after the playwright August Wilson. So I guess that would mean they wouldn't have to change the name. It would, of course, be August Wilson High School rather than Woodrow Wilson High School. But thanks for your call, Calvin. I do have to move on. Here is DT in Potomac, Maryland. DT, your turn.
Hi, Kojo. I'm so happy to be speaking to you. I'm a big fan of yours for the past 20 years that you've been on air.
Thank you.
Talking about the Make America Great hat, I just want to talk about it from a very different perspective. As a brown American, bringing up young ladies in this country, my older daughter is a senior at the Boston Conservatory, in an art school, and I just want to talk about her experiences. And as for me, as a brown American in America, and what that Make America Great hat represents to me. So basically, I came to this country in 1992. I have lived the American dream. I have a bachelor's in computer science. I worked at NASA. I run my own Indian dance school. My child was a privileged American kid who went to an art school, which was predominantly a very Caucasian school.
Well, what does all of that have to do with the young man who was wearing the MAGA cap on the mall?
Okay, I know. Let me come to that. So basically, she is in a school and the elections happen, Make America Great hats happen, and my child goes into the school. She's forgotten her key card and she's trying to get into the school, and somebody lets her in and then looks at her and says, "I hope I didn't let a terrorist in."
Yes, because your daughter has an appearance of being an Asian?
Yes. Yes. So we are of Indian origin. So she looks brown. Mm-hmm. So she looks different. So
well, one of the concerns we were talking about with the arrest of this Coast Guard lieutenant who is a white nationalist is whether or not we are seeing an increase of that kind of racial and ethnic profiling in this region. And there seems to be an increasing consensus that, yes, we are seeing an increase in that. But thank you for your call. I do have to move on because Brenda in Northwest Washington wants to talk about the same issue. Brenda, your turn.
Hi, Kojo. I saw the picture and of the boy who seemed to be glaring on purpose, intentionally, and because he's a very good-looking boy, and he was really fixated on the American Indian man who had the drum. I think that he noticed, and I am a teacher, and I have taught kids that age for 35 years. I looked at that boy, and I looked at that picture several days in a row. I looked back at that picture, and I thought to myself, this is the situation when people with cameras come around and start taking pictures of things that are going on without any real knowledge of what's happening. That they took a picture of a boy who's maybe in middle school, maybe in junior high school, who, because somebody was taking his picture, was frozen in that position, and he looked sort of like that, like, I'm stuck now. And I don't know what to do. So I'm just going to stay right here. And I felt like everybody involved in that whole thing was kind of off on the wrong foot.
Well, there, what was contextualized was, first and foremost, it was a video. It was not a picture. And what was contextualized is that the Native American activist Nathan Phillips was trying to get between the young people who had come here for the March for Life and a group of men known as Hebrew Israelites, and he was beating his drum in order to get between the two groups. And the young man said he was standing there and doing nothing. He just happened to be looking at the Native American activists, and people, well, interpreted the picture the way they wanted to interpret it. The question we were raising is whether or not the lawsuit filed against the Washington Post for $250, saying that the Post covered it in the way that it did because they just wanted to slam President Trump, is that something that you would agree with?
No, and I think that it looks like everybody involved in it, and I haven't heard what you just told me before. So that's news to me. It just seems like everybody involved in that was at the wrong place at the wrong time, and they exhibited the absolutely inappropriate behavior at that time, didn't they? And then the thing about pictures that we do nowadays, where we get a picture and it looks like anything, and yep, we immediately send it off and start having everybody look at it and make assumptions that aren't true.
It's what starts conversations today, and that video certainly started a great many conversations. But I'm afraid we're just about out of time for this edition of Your Turn. So thank you very much for participating in it. Today's Your Turn was produced by Ruth Tam and Sydney Grannon. Just a reminder, we're hosting an event on school diversity in Montgomery County. If this topic interests you, you can be part of shaping our conversation. Go to kojoshow.org/blog and fill out our survey on how you view school boundaries and the achievement gap. Coming up on tomorrow's Politics Hour, we'll hear the latest updates from the D.C. Council, including the fast-tracking of the new sports gambling program from Council Chairman Phil Mendelson. Plus, we'll talk with Howard County's Executive Calvin Ball about his plans for the county's biggest challenges, including flood protection in areas like Ellicott City. And we'll also dig into a new poll about Marylanders' opinions on everything from a possible President Larry Hogan to Old Bay. So that all starts tomorrow at noon. Until then, thank you for listening. I'm Kojo Nam.
The Kojo Namdi Show is produced by Ruth Tam, Mark Gunnery, Julie Deppenbrock, and Margaret Barthel. Our managing producer is Angelisa Schrobstorff, and our senior producer is Mana Kashvi. Our intern is Sydney Grannon, and our engineer is Josephine Neonai. For past shows and more content, visit kojoshow.org.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.